Bonney.
May it please the court.
Yes, sir.
I'm Douglas Imbarlow from Beaumont, Texas, and I'm appointed for Mr. Mark Anthony Owens under the Criminal Justice Act for purposes of appeal. I was not his trial attorney, but I'm his direct appeal attorney. My remarks will be limited to Mr. Owens' case. I do not represent Ms. Kirkwood, who was the co-defendant, the other person indicted, the first person listed in the indictment, in which both of these defendants were charged with a bank robbery in Beaumont, Texas, just east of Houston, where we're located here today. I want to direct my remarks to issue number two, which relates to the sufficiency of the evidence or the lack of sufficiency that we've advanced in the brief that I filed. I'd like to address the applicable law, the standard of review that I think we all agree upon, the facts that I think are important in the case, and some important precedential authorities that I think this court should consider as controlling or influential in the case in that order in this brief time period. I think we all agree in our briefs that we filed about what the applicable law is. The standard of review, of course, is under Jackson v. Virginia and all the other cases that this court has cited and cited in the briefs on each side, that this court must review the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict and determine whether or not there's sufficient evidence from which a rational juror could have concluded guilt. This court, of course, also has to draw reasonable inferences in favor of support of that verdict. And despite that onerous burden for the defense to overcome in this case, we submit that the outcome should be clear. This court has stated in the past, as cited in the brief that I filed in the Guerrero case, that even though those credibility choices must be viewed in favor of the jury's verdict and this court should not reweigh the evidence, this court has stated, but if the evidence viewed in the light most favorable to the prosecution gives equal or near equal circumstantial support to a theory of guilt and a theory of innocence, the conviction should be reversed. I submit that that's what the facts are that's presented in this case before the court, is that it is just as consistent with the theory of innocence. The facts that, yes, Your
Honor. Go ahead.
The facts that were adduced concerning Mr. Owens, that I'm going to address specifically those facts. It's the first thing to consider is it's telling in the government's brief the way the government assessed the evidence. The government addresses this review by the court that the court has to conduct, and this court has to note in the government's brief that the government discusses on page 23 of its brief the chain of evidence from the government's theory is that this began when the teller, Janice, who testified, said that she got the license plate from the truck, and that truck was then, and of course that truck was never actually linked to being driven by Mr. Owens in any way.
But it was a black Ford SUV, right?
That's correct. And it was the truck that belonged to Mr. I don't think there's any question that it was the truck that belonged
to
Mr.
Is there nothing on the security cameras that's relevant?
I don't recall specifically. Mr. Ross may have a better recollection since he was there, but I don't think there's too much of a dispute about the truck that was actually utilized, and it belonged to Mr. or it was utilized by Mr. English, but no one places Mr. Owens in that truck. But that's where the government makes its quantum link to Mr. Owens by claiming that in its brief that truck is somehow linked to Mr. Owens. I submit that that's it's not actually linked to Mr. Owens other than some tangential way.
Well, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence, though.
It is.
The neighbor saw him, and he tried to bribe the woman at the club, the YMCA, to say he was there when he was not.
I recognize that, Your Honor, and I also point out that that's similar to one of the other cases I'm going to discuss here, too, that was disputed at testimony about that bribe. There was a plausible explanation that was offered concerning whether or not he tried to bribe that person and what time he actually arrived. Very plausible explanations from the defense, despite the fact that the court has to consider the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict. The appellate cases that this court, that I've cited in my brief, the holdings of this court also discuss some of the defense evidence that was presented concerning alibi and the defensive evidence that was presented concerning alibi. Despite that leak by the government, there was never any actual testimony that Mr. Owens was seen in possession of the truck. And it's also important to note that the theory that's just as consistent with theories of innocence is the fact that Mr. English testified that other persons had equal access to that truck. There were a number of persons that were at the residence that night. His keys were left out, and I believe Mr. English even testified at the trial that Mr. Owens did bar his truck from time to time, but he never did so without...
I thought a neighbor saw the truck in the driveway early in the morning, and 15 minutes later it was gone. He saw Owens in the vicinity
that is
about
correct.
That time, not, these other people, the owner of the truck testified, they left when he did that night.
That's correct, Your Honor. There's testimony about that, even though it's not clear who took the truck. It's as I submit,
saying,
it's possible.
If there's circumstantial evidence in each step of the way.
In each step of the way, I submit it proves that Mr. Owens could have done it, but I submit it does not. The government did not adduce sufficient facts from which a juror could conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that he's the person that did it. He could have done it, but there's just not sufficient proof of that. Other people had equal access to that truck. There were other persons that could have done it. The evidence adduced by the government was testimony of Mr. English, and he said whoever used that truck did so without his permission, and Mr. Owens never used the truck without his permission. That's what the testimony from the government was. On page 24 of the government's brief, it discussed the investigation and how Ms. Kirkwood, of course, never mentioned Mr. Owens at the beginning of the investigation, and she repeatedly testified throughout that he had nothing to do with it. I'd like to discuss specifically the two cases that I think are very important. The Guerrero case, and if you actually look at the case and the facts in each of these cases, in the Guerrero case and the case that I've referred to this court under 28J, the Gandolfo case, both of them, the facts in those cases are much more compelling to support guilt, and yet this court has found the evidence insufficient in each of those cases. And I'll jump directly to the Gandolfo case. That was where Gandolfo, the evidence was held to be sufficient, but regarding the co-defendant Ritter, it was held to be insufficient despite the fact that the convicted defendant, Mr. Gandolfo, introduced Harry Ritter, the co-defendant, to another person. He was in the company of Mr. Gandolfo before the offense. Mr. Harry Ritter rented the motel room that was near the offense.
Gandolfo is close. It's an opinion. The opposing counsel received it, I'm sure. I didn't see a false exculpatory in that case, though. Right?
Did see what?
A false exculpatory, the YMCA attempting to try to
in this case, and it's interesting, in these other cases, the court has discussed whether or not that the alibi defenses
but it's more than an alibi, right? He tried to make a false excuse if you credit the
testimony.
That's
what's in dispute.
Right, but if you credit it, and Gandolfo doesn't have that, that's...
It doesn't, but there was also disputed... In Gandolfo, there was also, I believe, disputed testimony about whether the alibi was a good alibi or not, whether he could have been at work.
Does Gandolfo predate Jackson versus Virginia? Hmm. Was that 1979?
I think it's a 78 case, but...
Well, Gandolfo's 78.
Gandolfo's 78.
Yeah, well, the only reason I ask is that Jackson versus Virginia heightened the deference on review. I will look it up.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I appreciate it, and I stand on my brief regarding the other issue.
Thank you, sir. All right, Mr. Cossum.
Yes. May it please the court. Good morning, Justices. I think I want to preface my comments this morning just with an aside, which I understand does not really affect the legal issues involved, but as the court may be aware, I was a trial counsel for Ms. Kirkwood as well, and I must confess to the court that the verdict against my client was the most disappointing in my 30 years as a trial lawyer. That being said, I recognize the court needs to look at the legal issues and whether or not there is sufficient evidence to convict her, or whether there was error either in admitting or not granting a mistrial based on misconduct by the prosecution, or whether the court erred in failing to grant severance. Like Mr. Barlow, I want to concentrate primarily on the sufficiency issue, although I do want to touch very briefly on the severance issue. Recognizing the fact, Zaffiro the U.S. kind of sets the Supreme Court standard as to when severance is granted, and I recognize the fact that cases typically give great deference to the trial court in making that decision. But in Zaffiro, the standard was set that severance should be granted if there is a serious risk that a joint trial would compromise a specific trial right of one of the defendants. It is our position that with regard to Ms. Kirkwood, that certainly has occurred. The fact that there was so much inculpatory evidence based on the false alibi issue that has been discussed, that Ms. Kirkwood had no ability during this trial to control the admission of that evidence. the fact that Mr. Owens was unavailable to testify to her.
That's what I didn't understand. You say in your brief that it would have made a difference if there's a severance, that he could have testified and helped her out. How would that severance, why would he testify?
I agree to some extent that that's speculative. The problem is that that situation never came to fruition, so we don't know.
Well, he was indicted, and why would he waive his Fifth Amendment rights and testify in her trial?
Had he been tried before Ms. Kirkwood, he would have either A, been acquitted, and there would be no Fifth Amendment issue anymore. B, he may have been convicted, and we don't know whether he would have chosen to come clean. I think it's clear from the brief and the review of the transcript, Ms. Kirkwood's position is she certainly has no knowledge that Mr. Owens was involved.
It just seems speculative to me that he would testify, and number one. Number two, what he would say. So it's hard for us me to see how much weight we can give that.
I recognize that, but I think the other issues are sufficiently important for severance in this case.
Why did you find this case disturbing?
Well, I don't want to go outside the record, Your Honor, but
no.
I think there's a lot of motions involved where you saw that Ms. Kirkwood, and testimony even during the trial, where she was cooperative without. She never refused to talk to anybody. She actually actively sought out the ability to talk to the government, offered to take polygraphs, offered to be wired to help in the investigation.
Was her defense very aimed at the only other teller?
Excuse me?
Was your defense for her at trial aimed at the other teller being the one that created, or is it blurred?
It's blurred.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. But I do believe in viewing the record as a whole and the testimony, much of which was cited in my brief, that her actions are just as consistent throughout with a person who is a victim of a crime as someone who is actively involved in a crime.
Would you agree that the severance issues are different for the two defendants because her being joined shows knowledge and opportunity for Owens, but it might be a more compelling case. Was it a joint motion to sever?
Well, Mr. Owens filed a motion to sever.
And you joined it?
We filed separate motions, as I recall.
Okay.
I want to, though, move, because they actually kind of overlap on the line of questioning, now to the sufficiency issue. Certainly, Mr. Barlow and the court is well aware of what the issues are. We recognize the fact that typically deference needs to be given to the jury's verdict. But I do believe, first of all, let me say, that to the extent Mr. Barlow's argument is accepted on based on Gandolfo and the sufficiency issue on whatever grounds with regard to Mr. Owens, if there is insufficient evidence with regard to Mr. Owens, it is clear from the record that the linchpin relied upon by the government in this case was my client's association with Mr. Owens. So that if the evidence is insufficient to Mr. Owens, although there is other circumstantial evidence involving Ms. Kirkwood, it must be insufficient as to Ms. Kirkwood. That is the linchpin of their case. The connection between...
That's what they said in closing argument. It was teamwork. Okay,
correct.
But if we find that there's sufficient evidence on Owens, then you need to...
Well, and I'll go into that. If you look at the entirety of the record, there is not the theory of the government, as kind of set forth in my brief, was A, they think Ms. Kirkwood was involved in the crime because of her relationship with Mr. Owens, that this allegation that she changed a license plate number, this allegation that she did something wrong in letting the robber into the bank, the fact she arrived early on the day of the robbery, failing to provide the 911 operator with the license number, and
saying that he turned the opposite direction.
Well, this is where you may be at some disadvantage, although the tape is in evidence to hear it. And you can see from my cross-examination of the 911 operator, she thought Ms. Kirkwood's actions that morning were entirely consistent with someone who had just been robbed. She also talked about, meaning the 911 dispatcher, her own problems with divided attention. She's trying to do three things at once. When you listen to the tape as opposed to reading it, you know that Ms. Kirkwood is trying to do several things at once. In fact, she's talking to Ms. Jenis at the same time she's talking to the 911 operator. And the bottom line is the 911 operator, who was listening to Ms. Kirkwood, feeling her anxiety, found nothing at all suspicious, according to her own sworn testimony, in the way Ms. Kirkwood acted that morning.
She denied on, did she take the stand?
Who?
Your client?
Oh, yes, okay. Extensively. And,
but she was pretty categorical that it wasn't Owens.
No. She was.
It wasn't his voice.
Correct.
Okay.
She was very categorical that it was not Mr. Owens in that bank because she is convinced she would have recognized something.
That approach of yours and hers ties her inextricably to his fate, because if a jury can credibly find that it was him, then she's just made a false statement under oath, which is valid inculpatory evidence sufficient for a verdict.
Well, it is a concern.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that she was very equivocal as to whether he was involved. She, in fact, some of the testimony was, she actually went to the Y to question this person who was his alibi to make sure that really was he there. That's testimony in the trial. The fact is that she, on the issue of her knowledge of Mr. Owens's involvement, her bottom line is, I don't know if he was involved. It is very consistent the way the evidence was laid out that maybe Mr. Owens was involved but was not the robber in the bank. And in fact, it makes sense that he would not be the robber in the bank, seeing as Miss Jenis knew Mr. Owens, that is the other teller, and obviously Miss Kirkwood knew Mr. Owens. And therefore, if he was involved without her knowledge, it would make sense that, yes, he may have been involved given all the testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your
Honor. We have time for rebuttal. Mr. Ross.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Chief Judge, Counsel.
Yes, sir.
I'll just open by saying that, you know, one of the great challenges for us in preparing the brief in this case, there was so much circumstantial evidence, it was almost difficult to marshal it in a way that was economical in the number of pages we used and convey the entire picture to you. But we attempted to do that. Mm-hmm. And but what I'll start with then is to run down the kind of a checklist of the key facts that connect Owens to the crime, and then I'll do the same with Kirkwood. First, the truck is directly connected to Mark Owens, and to answer your question, Your Honor, there were about there were more than 10 video cameras that captured this, recorded the entire bank robbery inside and outside of the bank. We used 10 in our we put 10 of those into evidence, and we also put into evidence a master slideshow, which is very, if you want to look at that, it actually compiles the pertinent slides from the various cameras, and it was helpful at trial. So it was clear on the video and by the capture of the license plate number that the truck, and it was a Chevy S10, a black distinctive beat-up Chevy S10 pickup truck that belonged to Anthony English. Anthony English, the evidence showed at trial, was Mark Owens' lifelong best friend. And Mark Owens was known, and English testified, that it was common for Owens to borrow the truck and leave his motorcycle at his house. They would swap vehicles in that way. So the truck was directly tied to Owens. Further, that when the truck was recovered from its drop spot, just a short distance from the bank, it had been covered with a tarp, and there was even a receipt in the glove box that returned.
What was the date on the receipt?
The date of the receipt? It was not particularly pertinent, Your Honor. It was an older receipt.
My point is, there was audios, he drove it all the time, that receipt could have been there a long time. If it was there that morning, it's something else.
That's true, Your Honor, and that, no, it was not.
The receipt doesn't help.
It was not dated to... It was just, I just mentioned it, this is just another just corroboration of his connection to the truck. And further, the drop spot was just down the street from an apartment that had been shared previously within the last 2 years, approximately, by Owens, Kirkwood, and English. They'd all lived together in that neighborhood where there's a row of apartments on this Prutzman Street that was just a hop, skip, and a jump from the bank. Next, the drop, what I'd call the drop of the motorcycle in this case. And that happens, the bank robbery began, according to the video and the testimony trial, at approximately 8:23 a.m. The 911 call went out approximately 8:32. And approximately 15 minutes after that, Anthony English's neighbor, Randolph Washington, sees Mark Owens quickly come up the driveway of Anthony English's house where the truck had been the day before, or in fact that morning the truck had been there. But he sees Mark Owens come up. He identifies Mark Owens at that time and also in court. And further, he states that he has a black pack over his duffel bag type pack that was similar to the bag that was used in the robbery that we can see plainly in the video. He's got this bag over his shoulder. Next, Randolph Washington observes Mark Owens go into the house, and he doesn't come out. And then further testimony showed there was a back door to the house that wasn't fenced in. You could get out that way. About 5 minutes after Randolph Washington observed that, and in my brief I said 10 minutes. In preparing for oral argument, I noted in the record it was actually only 5 minutes, according to Randolph Washington, that Officer Troy Dyson from the Beaumont Police Department arrived at Anthony English's house. And he was able to just did some fine police work, I submit to the court, felt the motorcycle, it was warm. He noted the license plate, it ran that license plate, although it wasn't until the next morning that the significance of the motorcycle registration became apparent to law enforcement, but he noted that evidence. And he banged on the door, and no one ever came out. So no one ever saw Mark Owens come out of the house. Approximately 15 minutes after that, two witnesses at the nearby YMCA Melton, which is about a mile from Anthony English's home, two witnesses there observed Mark Owens come up to the Y on foot. Courtney Moore, Daisy Johnson was a patron of the YMCA that morning, and she had a view of the parking lot. And she said that she observed Mark Owens come up on foot, that she noted that he seemed kind of hot and sweaty and out of breath, almost as if he'd been running. Courtney Moore was an employee of the YMCA. She was the receptionist. And it should be noted for you that Mark Owens was a frequent patron. In fact, he worked from time to time at the YMCA there and knew his way around that YMCA. But she testified, of course, that Mark Owens came in and tried to give a false exculpatory statement to her. He was doing community service there. Of course, we didn't present that evidence or the evidence that he'd been on community service to the jury, but he was attempting to sign himself in or to make it appear, have her sign himself in to make it appear as though he'd been there, of course, when the bank robbery occurred, which we argue that the rest of the evidence shows that he was committing the bank robbery. He wasn't there. And in fact, it was the only time that month that he had showed up for community service at the Y, happened to be at this exact time when this robbery happened.
Was Kirkwood ever asked if she recognized English as the robber?
I don't know. This is one of those things that Anthony English is a huge person, and I think that's apparent in various places in the record. And he was very distinctive. They had a nickname for him. They called him Bacon Grease at the bank. Everybody knew him, knew his truck and whatnot.
So he's not similar in size?
He's not at all similar in size to Mark Owens. In fact, Mark Owens is similar in size to the robber that's captured on video. And further, Anthony English was, of course, at his friend's house. The evidence shows when the bank robbery occurred.
He did have an alibi.
He did have an alibi. Owens is ID'd at the YMCA. He rejoins. The evidence showed.
One more question.
Yes, ma'am.
Is it possible? Can you be? What about the truck and the motorcycle being moved at different times? Could one person have done both things? That was confusing to me.
Oh, sure. The evidence was that Mark Owens had worked the previous night from 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. and
the truck was in the driveway when the neighbor first...
Oh, the neighbor went to work at 5:15 in the morning. Randolph Washington went to work.
And the truck was there.
And the truck was there. And at 6 a.m. when he returned, the truck was gone.
And then he saw Owens driving up on the motorcycle?
He did.
Okay, I
got you. Okay.
So the motorcycle was not there with the truck?
No, ma'am, not at that time.
Okay.
Not at that time. But in her statements to the FBI, and it came in actually in the second part of the case, but Kirkwood had told the FBI how she had picked up Mark Owens for work that morning. And was basically with him all morning and with him after the bank robbery. That came in when she testified.
Kirkwood put on a defense case, right?
She did.
Just herself or others?
Well, she put on herself, and then she put on a slew of character witnesses. And I just, to be responsive, I don't think it's particularly pertinent, but this idea that the verdict was disappointing and somehow troubling or painful, I would point the court to that, all the character witnesses that testified on her behalf, that basically all of them said that, and we basically agreed that she had a lot on the ball. She's a smart young lady. But all of the character witnesses agreed on cross-examination that she changed after she started dating Mark Owens, and that she was a different person. And everything they had to say about her that was good happened before she started dating Mark Owens, 3 years before. So it was sad.
Did the judge deliver, the Rule 29 motions were made at the end of the government's case and the end of the defense case? Yes?
I believe that's correct. I know they were made at the end of the government's case.
Okay. And just denied immediately?
They were denied.
How fast did the jury return its verdict?
After this 8-day trial, 20 witnesses, 80 exhibits, the jury took about 45 minutes to make their decision. They heard alibi witnesses from Mr. Owens that he produced.
Were the severance motions decided after a hearing or not?
After a hearing, yes,
they were
Your Honor.
Hearing on
That's
severance.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Because the severance issue is the one, even though it's not the focus here, and obviously the law is not very hospitable to it, but your case in closing argument was all about teamwork.
Correct.
And for Owen, as I said, I can see opportunity and knowledge it shows, but for her it really becomes very difficult for her to distance herself from him.
Right, correct.
You might just say that's her choice. She was living with him.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's just part of the facts of the case. The
911 tape, I think, opposing counsel, when you listen to it, it actually doesn't sound too dissembling. It's, as you might expect, panicked and fast, and she's being interrupted a lot. Is that fair to say? It's not full of dissembling. At least it's not evident listening.
That's fair to say. Okay. What I'd hope to do for the court is to hit the parts that are really the framework of it, and then there's all these nuances and layers of evidence and that come in and become relevant, including her behavior and things like that in that interview. Which, by the way, at the end of the 911 operator's testimony, after she, one of her last answer, I believe, was, "Knowing what you do, what knowing what I know now, I feel like I was duped by her." By Kimberly Kirkwood. So he's with Kirkwood immediately after the robbery, very shortly after the robbery. The FBI actually happens to be, by sheer happenstance, is passing the street adjacent to Mr. English's house, and he actually sees these two, an FBI agent and a task force officer, observe Mark Owens reclaim his motorcycle and leave later that afternoon from English's house on the motorcycle.
Whatever happened to the money?
The money was never found. However,
so in all this chronology, where do you hypothesize the money could have gone?
Well, probably spent or,
Spent?
I don't know, Your Honor.
The chronology I'm talking about is around the,
around
the time of the robbery, and he's carrying the backpack to English's house, which, that has the money in it, he had to secrete it somewhere.
I misunderstood your question, Your Honor.
Okay.
There's a locker room at the YMCA, for one thing, and it's not, now that...
Well, was he carrying a backpack when he went to the YMCA?
That's true, he was not, but there's also testimony that there's... As I say, he was familiar with the corridors of that building, how to get in and out of it without going to the...
In the parking lot, saw him running up, sweaty and breathing heavily. Wouldn't she have noticed a backpack?
Sure, I submit that she would have. There's no evidence that he had the backpack. I would just submit to the court that there was plenty of opportunity, based on the timeline that's laid out, for him to stash it somewhere.
Was English's house searched at some point?
It was. It was searched later that morning, and there was nothing there. No clothes, no bag or anything. But I submit to the court, based on the timeline, that it could have been stashed almost anywhere. In fact, his house was very close to where this.
And they were arrested shortly after all this, right?
He was not arrested shortly after this. It was sometime after he was arrested. So,
what's the strongest evidence on Kirkwood?
Oh, boy. The strongest evidence on Kirkwood, it begins with the loading of the drawer, which is just all the bank employees testified it was unheard of, that she should have loaded her cash, first of all, been over her $25,000 limit, after 2 o'clock, the Friday before the bank robbery, and then request an additional $60,000+. In fact, it even put the bank in a bind for cash the next morning. It was against bank practice. She, the teller that she was paired with for the next morning would have been in the better position to determine what the needs of cash were going to be for the next day. And so first would be the loading of the cash drawer to more than approximately $90,000. The setup of Jesse Janus, I don't know any other way to explain it than that, except that they were, it was out of the ordinary for her to bring Jesse Janus to work. Jesse Janus did not have a car at the time, but her mother was bringing her to work. Kirkwood reached out, offered her to bring her to work, arrived so early that Janus wasn't ready yet. It was very typical for the bank tellers to get there at 9 a.m. when the bank was opening up. Janus lived a few minutes from the bank, and the evidence was that Kirkwood was in Janus's driveway at 8:23, and she'd already bought breakfast and magazines and all these other things. So, so that would be second, I guess, in order, in chronological order, as the way I'm going. The open door, the way she opened the door and disregarded bank policy that way, that's something you just have to see. And
did Gina say it was opened in a way to open for the next person coming through? Did her co-teller say it looked like she was sort of holding it longer so the lock wouldn't, see what I mean?
I'm not sorry.
If the hold, you mean the door when the other robber comes in?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and the only other person there and who did testify was, is her name pronounced Genus?
Yes, sir.
Genus. Did she testify that it looked like she hadn't shut it quickly enough? In other words, to her, did it look suspicious?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But it was one of these things that almost, it defied logic. I mean, she couldn't, finally, she just decided to go into the bank.
Well, she testified she was scared to go, and she saw this person, and she was staying in the vehicle while Kirkwood went in, I thought. And she said Kirkwood did something suspicious about the door, and then...
Kirkwood held the door open, and with is almost as close as I am to you. It's all glass, and the truck is right there. The robber is dressed in a, it's warm outside, it's summertime. The driver's in the robber's in a black overcoat with a black hat, black gloves, and glasses. And the ordinary security practice is just to signal the other teller to come in. The other teller comes in with their own key. But Kirkwood literally, and of course it's captured on the slideshow, just opens the door. She holds it open for nearly 30 seconds, to my recollection, and even turns her back. When finally, when it's as if she's prompting Janus to get out of the car. I mean, she opens it partway, and Janus doesn't get out of the car. She opens it fully open. This strange person is right here, and Janus finally, after 30 seconds, gets out of the car. And the comment that Janus made as she entered the bank, I submit, is telling. She said, "What's up with that guy?" And Kirkwood says, "I don't know."
And she also had a card key for the vault in her, with her, and Janus said that was odd.
She did. Yeah, there was a dual control on the vault, and yeah, there was a key to get into the through the door to get to the vault, and Kirkwood had her key to get to the vault, which was odd. Further, the robber picked the right person because Kirkwood knew both codes to the combination lock that was inside of the door, and Janus did not. She only knew one half of the combination. But that falls under the category of the more nuanced evidence, circumstantial evidence in the case. But her behavior at the door was completely, was essentially shocking to her coworkers. Next, she dissuaded Janus from getting off the floor to capture the license plate number. And that you can actually watch this happening on the video. And then the issue of the 911 call, it's longer than 5 minutes. It's well longer than 5 minutes. Janus writes down the license plate number on a checkbook and gives it to Kirkwood. And Kirkwood talks to the 911 operator for more than 5 minutes and never gives the license plate number. In fact, is asked a direct question and doesn't give the license plate number. And finally, then there's the evidence that she actually even went further and altered the license plate number, which was very, very telling, very powerful evidence supplied by Bray Fisher, the handwriting expert from the FBI. So essentially everything that she did was, and then you've got, you'd ask the question, Judge Owen, about the turning right, turning north. And everything that she did bought time for the getaway, I would submit. Everything she did tried to distance herself or the robber from the truck, or distance the law enforcement from that truck. One thing that we talked about in the closing, and I don't think—
Was a gun ever found?
There were two guns found in her house, in their apartment, and she only admitted to having one. And arguably, there's a gun. Arguably, there's circumstantial evidence that the robber had a gun.
Right. That's
and in fact, she, in the category of nuanced evidence or more nuanced evidence, she actually purchased both of those firearms. She purchased two. She only admitted to possessing one. She also purchased the motorcycle as essentially a straw purchaser for Owen about 2 years before the robbery because he didn't have credit. And that evidence was in front of the jury as well. What I was about to mention is that the 911 call, when measured against the length of the video, and then you have the audio of the 911 call, there's very good evidence that she delayed about 20 seconds before she actually placed the 911 call. And I submit to that, I always thought that was fairly significant evidence because as it actually played out, it was a matter of minutes, seconds, that those officers didn't catch him right there at that house up on the motorcycle where the truck should have belonged. So, in fact, she did, in effect, I would submit, bought enough time for the getaway in this case. And there's much, much more circumstantial evidence in the case.
Well, Genus could have placed the 911 call. She didn't within that time period.
Nobody really, she called the bank manager. She handed the phone to Kirkwood and asked Kirkwood to call 911. Genus called the bank manager. There was nothing particularly unusual about that. And in fact, they didn't really suspect because Kirkwood was a pretty good employee. And as it was going down, she wasn't a suspect at first.
Oh, and you just say she delayed in calling 911 as if she was the one to call. And I'm just saying there were two there. And now you're saying it looked like Genus was taking charge of the scene and directing Kirkwood. So I'm just saying that's not necessarily a telling fact.
Not necessarily, except she didn't just delay. It's from the time she has the phone in her hand and it looks like she's dialing. She doesn't dial for 20 seconds. And it's hard in an emergency, someone's going to be really trying to call 911 in a hurry. And if you just count out 20 seconds, that's a long time in a situation like this.
Okay, we have your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Barlow.
Please, Court, I have just a few comments I'd like to respond to. The government's theory in this case is that we don't really know who else was involved with Ms. Kirkwood, and Mr. Owens must be the logical person, therefore we've concluded that it must be him. And there were great attempts to offer evidence to substantiate that, to corroborate that, but it simply didn't corroborate guilt. The guns that the courts just discussed, both the ATF, this is referenced on page 15 of the brief, the ATF agent, and the FBI agent referenced on page 18 of the brief, both agreed that the guns were not, that they could not establish that the guns were connected with the offense in any way or any of the other clothing or anything else that they seized. They simply couldn't find any physical evidence despite their best efforts to do so.
Did they seize the black clothing?
They seized some black clothing, some of the black clothing, a black coat that was at Mr. Owens' house, which remained in his closet throughout. I know they didn't seize it. They seized another coat. And that coat, I think, was established not to be similar or not to be the coat that was used in the robbery. There were sunglasses that were offered up to try to say these are similar to the sunglasses. Turns out they were some type of designer sunglasses, not similar to the rimless sunglasses that were described by one of the government's witnesses. No one saw Mr. And so there was this dearth of evidence, all these attempts to try to establish what the government's theory was, but nothing successful. No one saw Mr. Owens at the bank. No one saw him driving the truck, even though he and others had the opportunity to do so. There was no money found associated with Mr. Owens. There was no inculpatory statements by Mr. Owens. The issue regarding the alibi, it makes very logical sense of why he would want to make it clear what time he arrived, because the unimpeached testimony of two witnesses offered by the defense established he arrived there earlier and wanted the records to be correct about what time he arrived. And I submit that the government's witness was one who admitted that on, under oath that she lied to the FBI initially. So this is the government's witness who says, you have to believe me now when I swear that I lied. And that's simply not the type of evidence that is sufficient to support a conviction.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Ross?
Quickly, I just need to take issue with a lot of representations as to what the evidence showed that Mr. Ross was telling the court. Good example, Jesse Jenness. You asked me earlier, you know, whether our theory is that she was the one who was actually aiding. The fact is we don't know. Mm-hmm. We know that anything suspicious that Ms. Kirkwood allegedly did could be attributed to Ms. Jenness. The record is clear that Ms. Jenness is the one who saw the suspicious person, and yet she never called in to alert Ms. Kirkwood. The evidence also showed that Ms. Kirkwood was aware that Ms. Jenness was having to carry in breakfast, newspapers, and coffee, so wouldn't it be polite to open the door for her? The bottom line is, I agree with the idea that it is equally possible Ms. Jenness was the one involved here and not Ms. Kirkwood. The alleged altered documents.
Jenness testified, and you had unfettered cross of her.
I did have unfettered cross of her. FBI document examiner, this alleged altered document, the testimony was that they could not determine if the document had been altered, but there were some signs indicative of that. What they were 100% positive of is the ink used to make any change into what was written was the exact same ink that had written the original thing.
But Jenness knew what she'd written down, and she recognized that what she'd written down was, did not match what was later written down.
Which could fold into the theory that she is trying to cover her own robbery and point it at Ms.
Kirkwood. Why would she write down the wrong license plate number to begin with? That's what I don't understand.
I don't know why a lot of things happened in this case, Your Honor, but it is equally consistent to me that she is fabricating evidence to cover up her own involvement in the robbery as trying to catch Ms. Kirkwood being involved in the robbery.
Is there any connection between her and Owens or her and English?
She knew them both, and she, in fact, she testified she knows Mr. English's vehicle because it's always there, and she did not recognize it this morning, and yet the government's suggesting that Ms. Kirkwood should have. Just very, very quickly, and I'll sit down, because questions were asked about evidence found at the residence. Robert King, the first FBI agent, or one of the two FBI agents, said under oath, nothing found at the residence was connected to the robbery, and there's nothing linking either of the two handguns found at the residence to the robbery. Thank you all very much.
All right, thank you. We thank you, Mr.